This is David Harlow with Diabetes Innovation, and I'm speaking today with Tim Noakes, who is Chair of Exercise and Sports Science at the University of Cape Town, South Africa. Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thank you for having me, David. Great. Appreciate it very much.
So I know what I know about your work is that you're co-founder of the Sports Science Institute of South Africa. You had the Medical Research Council, University of Cape Town Research Unit for Exercise Science and Sports Medicine. And I would say you've also done a fair amount of first-person empirical research in this field. Your bio says you've run over 70 marathons and ultramarathons. What's the most extreme ultramarathon that you've ever run?
Oh, we have a race called the Comrades Marathon in South Africa. It's 56 miles. But it's a very hilly 56 miles, and that's kind of, if you want to be something in South African sport, you have to run the Comrades Marathon. So we don't think a standard 26-mile marathon is far enough. We have to double the distance and add a few miles, and then that proves you're a real runner.
Great.
It's a race that's been going since 1921. It is shown on national television for 12 hours. It's kind of the Super Bowl of South African sport. And it's just a national event when the nation comes to a stop to watch this race.
Well, that's wonderful. I hope you keep doing that for many years. So what is the connection then between your interest in exercise and nutrition and the work that we're talking about at Diabetes Innovation?
Well, it's really quite simple. In 1985, I published my first edition of a book called Law of Running, L-O-R-E of Running. And this soon became one of the most popular books written on running and considered to some extent the Bible of the sport. And it's been through four editions now. And each of them expounded more that carbohydrate was crucial for your ability to run and, of course, for your health. And so the last edition in 2002, that's exactly what it said. If you're not eating carbohydrates, 50 to 60 to 70% of your diet must be carbohydrate in order to run well. The only problem was that I was following that diet and getting progressively slower in my running and fatter and ultimately developed type 2 diabetes, which I realized somewhat later. And then I had this epiphanous moment when I decided something had to change, and I fortunately was exposed to the low-carbohydrate work of Dr. Jeff Volek and his colleagues. And one day I decided, okay, I'm doing so badly eating all these carbohydrates, surely I can't do worse. Let's cut the carbohydrates and turn to a high-fat diet, as promoted by Dr. Volek. So I did that. And the results were dramatic. I lost 20 kilograms of weight, and I subsequently decided I had type 2 diabetes and needed treatment, but my diabetes is quite well controlled on metformin and this low-carbohydrate diet. And then I realized I had to say sorry that I'd been misleading people for so long, telling them to eat the high-carbohydrate diets. And so my conclusion is, if you're like me and you have a family history of diabetes, my father died of the disease, his brother died of the disease, and it's clearly come directly through to myself and my own children, I realize that we all have insulin resistance or carbohydrate intolerance. And for us, we must restrict the amount of carbohydrate we eat in our diets. And the more we restrict, the better we do. And so that is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say, sorry, I was wrong. Certainly, carbohydrates are okay for some people, but for the vast majority, in my view, you can't eat too much carbohydrate or you're going to run into trouble in the long term.
Well, that must be a difficult step to take, to backtrack on such a public statement of a position. And I imagine that this is grounded not only in your own experience, but in other research as well.
Indeed. So when I read the first book that I was directed to, and I read Dr. Volek's work particularly, and I remember reading the book that he had written with Dr. Westman and Finney, And it said it was a new Athens for the new you, and it said 175 publications on low carbohydrate diets and how effective they are. And I feel, but that's completely wrong. How would I have been able to practice and go through medicine and being a sports scientist and not know any of this research? And I was embarrassed that I knew nothing about the research. And when I read it, it became very clear to me that there is a huge body of evidence that high carbohydrate diets are not healthy for many people, whereas the low carbohydrate diets are helpful. And as a result of that, I came across Gary Taubes' book, Good Calories, Bad Calories. And when I read that, that just completely, the scales fell from my eyes. And I said, how could we have been so misled? And then I started promoting these ideas, and you're quite correct. I was very, very heavily criticized in South Africa. But over the last 2 years, I think the position is changing, and people are saying he may be wrong, but it's not because there's no science. In a sense, before they were saying there's no science, he's just talking nonsense. Now they say he may be wrong, but there is actually science to justify some of his statements.
So is there a scientific debate on this issue, or is it a pretty clear-cut question as far as you're concerned?
As far as I'm concerned, it is clear-cut. The evidence, in my view, is that the more insulin resistant you are, in other words, the more you are likely to have diabetes, or if you have diabetes, there's no question. You do not need carbohydrates in the diet, and the less carbohydrates you eat, the healthier you will be. To me, there is no debate. The problem is that, in my view, the drivers of the high carbohydrate diets are political and economic. They're not medical and scientific. And unfortunately, the solution of this problem is a political one. It's not a medical solution.
So when you say political, that brings to mind some recent developments here in the United States. Number one, Earlier this year, the American Medical Association, over the objection, the counter-recommendation of the study committee on the issue, pronounced obesity to be a disease, sort of one issue. Another issue is that some local governments in the U.S. are taking steps to control food portion size and composition and ingredients in fast food that's being served. And I'm wondering, when you say that this is a political issue, are you thinking in terms of classification of obesity as a disease, for example? Are you thinking about control on the food supply, on what restaurants can and cannot serve? What do you see as the issue there?
It is so complex because it's almost impossible. One has to regulate the types of food that are sold, particularly processed food, because obesity really results from hunger. And obese people are always hungry. And they're hungry because their hunger is driven by addictive foods, but also by high carbohydrate diets. And the more addicted you are to the food, the more obese you will be. So the only way you can correct obesity ultimately is to take out addictive foods from the food chain. And tragically, all processed foods essentially are designed to be addictive. So that means to really correct and prevent obesity and diabetes, you have to take on the processed food industry. And those are 10 of the biggest companies in the United States of America, and no politician has the courage or the will to do that.
Yeah. So some of them have been making a lot of noise lately about trying to work on substitutes for salt, for example, in order to sort of create the same effect on the human brain in terms of wanting another chip, wanting another whatever, but it's not sodium, or it's low sodium, so as to reduce the physiological problems associated with that. Is that a productive line of work, do you think?
No, that's a stopgap. That's trying to prevent law or legal action being taken and political will being used to stop it. You just got to take processed foods out of the food chain. That's what you have to do. You have to get back to eating real foods, that we evolved on over millions of years. This industrial diet that we're eating today is a direct cause of the problem. And you can't make processed foods healthy. That's essentially the problem.
So given the greater distance from farm to table these days, for many of us, is that, do you think that's a practical solution? How is that going to work, for example, for large urban areas?
You're absolutely right. I'm not really a food economist, and so I can't address that question. But as a biologist, I just know that the solution is what you've described. We have to get the raw foods that can be cooked by people who understand how to cook and prepare their own food into their kitchens. And however we do that, I don't know. But until we do it, we cannot reverse the obesity and diabetes epidemic.
Okay. Well, I mean, in this country and elsewhere around the world, there's a growing movement for a community-based agriculture and small farms in urban areas, even in order to move in that direction. I guess the question, as you say, for the food economist, is how to really scale that movement in a way that doesn't disrupt the distribution of food.
And then, of course, you have the problem that most of the food is raised on corn anyway, the feedlot animals, and those aren't particularly healthy either. So it's a real problem. Farming has to go back to traditional methods of farming.
Right. So another element here is sort of the classification of obesity as a disease, as I mentioned, by the American Medical Association, going against its own study committee recommendation. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's helpful in terms of focusing attention on the problem, or is it not helpful?
I'm not sure it's helpful because there's a direct cause, and that's excessive hunger. So obese people are always hungry, and you have to address why they're hungry. And they're hungry because they're eating high carbohydrate diets, which are nutrient poor and particularly addictive foods as well, and they're insulin resistant. So that's the combination. And obesity is completely curable if you sort those problems out. So I'm not sure that making it a disease is going to advance the cause in any way. It kind of now says, actually, there's nothing we can do for it. The patient cannot be helped. And that's wrong, because obesity is completely curable, even morbid obesity. And I've seen cases with my own experience following this diet and encouraging people to follow this diet. We've had some dramatic results. And so We can't let this become a disease that we consider to be incurable. I think we know what caused it, and we should address those issues. I think my point is this. What I discovered is that, so if foods cause obesity, what industry wants us to believe is that the patient's the cause of the obesity, and the patient is slothful and gluttonous and doesn't do enough exercise. And that's completely wrong. So we transfer the guilt to the patient rather than to the cause, which is the processed food industry.
So what sorts of conversations do you hope to have at the Diabetes Innovation Conference? What are the sorts of people you're looking forward to meeting there?
Well, because I have a direct interest in my own diabetes, I'd be very interested to see if there are any other additional methods for controlling my blood glucose concentration, because one has to be selfish at some time. However, my real interest is to try to promote the idea that it's impossible to control diabetes if you don't eat a low carbohydrate diet. That it's abundantly clear to me that you cannot reduce the long-term complications in either type 1 or type 2 diabetes in people eating high-carbohydrate diets as prescribed by the American Diabetes Association. Once you get diabetes, you have to cut your carbohydrates to the absolute minimum. 25 grams a day is all you can afford to eat. And under those circumstances, I believe you might be able to reduce the complications in diabetes. The clear evidence is that if you continue to eat 200 or 300 or 400 grams of carbohydrate a day, you will develop the complications of diabetes, regardless of how much insulin or metformin or whatever you take. And there is so much clinical evidence that that is the case that we have to finally come and say, listen, the way we're treating diabetes isn't working. And it's because we haven't changed the main driver of the problem, which is the diet.
And so, at bottom, this is really an issue that requires behavior change of some very deep-seated behaviors. And I guess the question is, how do you motivate people to make those changes, which can be so difficult to do? Some folks are looking at digital aids, mobile health aids, smartphone apps. Do you see those as useful? Do you see other approaches to behavior changes as productive? What are successful in your mind?
Well, I think that you have to consciously get the idea that carbohydrates are killing you. And that's what I've done in my own case. I think you can reprogram your brain to not to see carbohydrates in the environment, or if you do see it, you see it as something that's negative. So I think that people first have to be given the message that carbohydrates are what kill you in diabetes. They're not getting that message at all. What they're getting the message at the moment is diabetes is an incurable disease, and all we can do is give you more insulin or more metformin, but your glucose control is going to get worse because your pancreatic function is going to get progressively worse, and you will get the complication of diabetes, and you will die from those complications. That's the message. So it's really what's worth doing. It's not worth doing anything. What the message we have to give out is that there is an option, and it is a low-carbohydrate diet. That doesn't mean to say you're definitely going to get fewer complications, but it's probable, and therefore you have every incentive to do it. We have to give that message, clear-cut message, which we aren't giving. And once you give that message, then people can make their choices. And the reality is that removing carbohydrates from the diet is actually not all that difficult, because the diet's absolutely delicious if it's prepared properly. And I personally, what I've done is I've just conditioned myself. When I see carbohydrate, I feel ill. And so the thought of putting carbohydrate in my mouth makes me ill before I've even done it. And you can reprogram yourself. And I suspect that that's the way we need to teach people. There must be some behavioral conditioning in which people just begin to despise carbohydrates because they see them as killing themselves.
Well, we'll have to set you up with a test kitchen at the conference so you can share some good low-carb recipes with the rest of us. Well, thank you very much. I've been speaking with Dr. Timothy Noakes. This is David Harlow with Diabetes Innovation.